Today is July 22, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover Trump's rejection of a special operations plan to physically retrieve Iran's enriched uranium stockpile, Ukraine's deep strike campaign against Russian refineries colliding with a new automatic sanctions push in the Senate, and Xi Jinping's rare trip to Pyongyang, which exposes just how much leverage Beijing has lost over Kim Jong-un as North Korea's wartime alliance with Moscow hardens into something structural. In 1980, 8 American servicemen died in a dust storm near Tabas, Iran, without ever engaging an Iranian soldier. That failure, Operation Eagle Claw, is the explicit historical reference point Trump cited this June when he personally requested, and then rejected, a Joint Special Operations Command plan to send American forces into Iran to physically retrieve the country's stockpile of uranium enriched to 60%, one technical step short of weapons grade. Mick Mulroy, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, called the proposal one of the largest and most complicated special operations ever conceived. The operational math explains why it died on the drawing board. This wasn't a raid measured in hours. It required American personnel to remain inside hostile Iranian territory for at least 2 weeks under sustained retaliation risk. The strategic calculus here is that the categorical risk of the 2026 plan was substantially higher than the 1980 mission it's being compared to, because Eagle Claw was designed to last hours, not weeks. What this leaves behind is a war with no closing chapter. Strikes on Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan can flatten enrichment infrastructure, but they cannot make existing material disappear, and they cannot substitute for physical inspection. The IAEA's Rafael Grossi has offered only a hedged judgment that the material is, in his words, most probably still at Natanz and Fordo, and most probably destroyed, language that reflects a complete verification blackout since Iran cut off IAEA monitoring on February 28th of this year. Trump's own reframing at the G7, saying there was no rush to retrieve the material and that recovery wasn't worth the effort, is a quiet but significant downgrade from the war's original aims. It hands the uranium question to a diplomatic track that Tehran continues to refuse. Former MI6 chief Sir Alex Younger has pointed to a more apt template than any quick resolution, the 1991 to 2003 Iraq interval, where a militarily degraded but unresolved regime absorbed years of enforcement strikes before any final reckoning. If that pattern holds, this isn't the end of the Iran confrontation. It's the opening phase of one that could run for years. While Washington wrestles with an unresolved endgame in Iran, Ukraine is testing how much economic pain Russia's war machine can absorb before something breaks. A strike on the Omsk refinery in western Siberia knocked out roughly 40% of regional refining capacity, triggering fuel rationing through QR codes and panic buying at the pump. Energy strategist Thomas O'Donnell frames the threshold clearly. Refineries knocked offline for around 6 weeks remain financially recoverable inside Russia's normal budget cycle, but stretch that outage to 12 or 16 weeks, which requires heavier munitions, and repairs stop being fiscally viable altogether. More importantly, this is happening as Russia burns through its most exotic weapons stocks. The Institute for the Study of War reports Moscow has fired 17 ballistic missiles and 20 Sirkon hypersonic missiles since early July, consuming roughly two-thirds of its entire planned annual Sirkon production run in about 3 weeks. That's a war economy spending its scarcest assets to compensate for a cheaper one. Shahed drones, whose monthly usage has fallen by more than half, as Russia pivots to exploit Ukraine's Patriot interceptor shortages instead. Building on that pressure, Washington is moving to make sanctions harder to reverse. Senator Steve Daines has filed an amendment, continuing work started by the late Senator Lindsey Graham, that would require the president to certify every 90 days whether Russia is negotiating in good faith, and failing that certification triggers automatic sanctions, including a ban on U.S. imports of Russian nickel, copper, and platinum metals. The strategic calculus here is that this shifts sanctions from a discretionary tool a future White House could simply waive into something closer to the JCPOA's old snapback mechanism, locked in, and removed from any single administration's control. The costs are already visible on Main Street. Axios reports U.S. diesel prices have crossed $5 a gallon for the first time, a direct transmission line from Ukrainian strikes on Russian refineries into American pump prices. Meanwhile, the EU's own 21st sanctions package has stalled, with Greece blocking shipping measures and Austria resisting the freezing of 2 billion euros tied to a single Austrian bank, a reminder that collective Western pressure is only as strong as its most reluctant member. Now to Northeast Asia, where the shifting geography of power looks less like a stable alliance map and more like a patron losing his only client. Xi Jinping's June visit to Pyongyang was his first trip to North Korea in 7 years, and his only overseas trip of the entire year. Compare that to the pattern of roughly 14 annual trips Xi made abroad between 2013 and 2019, falling to about 6 a year more recently, and you see a leader who is traveling less and choosing very deliberately when he does. The reason he chose Pyongyang now is structural, not sentimental. Open-source tracking work compiled by the UK's Open Source Center and RUSI shows North Korean shipping containers into Russia's Far East rose from around 15,800 between mid-2023 and spring 2025 to an estimated 33,000 containers and 15 million rounds of artillery shells by early this year. Put simply, North Korea may now be supplying somewhere close to 40% of the ammunition Russia is firing in Ukraine. More importantly, South Korea's own Institute for National Security Strategy estimates Moscow may have paid Kim's government up to $14.4 billion in troops and arms compensation, and only a fraction of that arrived as visible goods, implying the rest reflects technology transfer, plausibly including satellite and air defense assistance. For the first time since Kim took power in 2011, he has an alternative patron. That ends a dependency on Beijing that the National Committee on North Korea once estimated at up to 95% of North Korean trade. Kim Yo-jong declaring North Korea's nuclear status irreversible days before Xi's plane landed, and Kim's own photographed tour of a uranium enrichment site on the summit's eve, both signal Pyongyang no longer treats denuclearization as a price of admission to anyone's patronage. Brookings' read on the summit is telling. Chinese officials have quietly stopped raising denuclearization at all, calculating that pushing the issue now risks losing Kim entirely. Beijing's language for the relationship has shifted too, from the old hierarchical comrades and brothers framing to a flatter strategic partnership, arguably a demotion for China, from patron to peer. Worth watching alongside all three of these threads. China's own military is going through a purge cycle that Hudson Institute's Miles Yu argues is reactive rather than reformist. Roughly two-thirds of the Central Military Commission removed since the start of this year, following battlefield failures of Chinese-supplied air defense systems during the Iran campaign. Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates has pointed out that no current Chinese general has any combat experience at all. That, paired with force comparison data showing an amphibious assault on Taiwan would cross roughly 5 times the distance of the Normandy landings without guaranteed air supremacy, is quietly eroding the assumed 2027 invasion window analysts have debated for years. The specific signal to watch over the next 48 hours sits at the intersection of two of tonight's stories. This month marks the 65th anniversary of the 1961 Sino-North Korean Mutual Defense Treaty. Whether Beijing marks that anniversary with concrete deliverables, arms packages, air defense systems, joint drills, or with symbolic language alone will tell us whether China has actually clawed back any leverage over Kim, or whether Xi's Pyongyang trip was a one-time gesture papering over a relationship that has already tipped decisively toward Moscow. Watch that signal closely. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow.
That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening.
We'll be back tomorrow with more.